we have Giulio Chiribella talking from Beijing, and he will tell us about the information theoretic reconstruction of quantum thermodynamics.
Well, thanks, Philip. First of all, thanks to the organizers, Marcus, Philip, and Richard, for this beautiful meeting. I mean, I'm very excited by the whole program, and I look forward to listen to all the talks. So today, I have the honor and the pleasure to kickstart a thermodynamics session. And, well, I will do it in my own personal way, which may be probably different from the way that you will see in the next talks. So it is an axiomatic way. So I will take what we know about quantum thermodynamics as a sort of muse, and I will try to define axioms that retrieve the special properties of quantum thermodynamics. So this is a work done together with a PhD student, Carlo Maria Scandolo, who is now in Beijing and soon will be in Oxford. So let me start from a kind of generic comment. So thermodynamics is a very successful theory. I mean, it provides the foundation for the understanding of a lot of phenomenology. So it's a very successful paradigm. It has application almost everywhere. So applications go from engineering to fundamental physics and even to biology. When it was first formulated, it brought in some new notions that were not there before. So it brought the notions of heat, of entropy, of free energy, chemical potential. So these were genuinely new notions that appeared in the 19th or end of the 18th century. And the first question that you may ask about them are these new notions fundamental, or can they be derived? And how do they fit in the big picture of the rest of physics? So this was one of the very first questions asked about thermodynamics. And the first answer was statistical mechanics. Not the first answer, but the first answer that we still consider as a viable was a statistical mechanics. So the idea was to reduce thermodynamics to actually ordinary dynamics, like dynamics of particles or later dynamics of fields, and to statistics, I mean, to statistical predictions. So the idea, roughly speaking, is that the initial state of a system is chosen at random according to some probability distribution, and the system would evolve according to a known dynamics. So the thermodynamical quantities are reduced in this approach to expectation values. So they appear as derived quantities. Of course, when you do that in the classical world, there is a tension. There is a tension because in the classical view of the world, probability is not a fundamental concept. This was beautifully expressed by Laplace when he said, if you really could know all the positions and the momenta of the particles in the universe, you would have no uncertainty at all about the future as well as the past. So in the fundamental picture of classical physics, there is really no place for ignorance or for probability at the fundamental level. And there are a couple of questions that relate to that. So one is, why should a measured quantity, something that I do measure in the lab, depend on some assignment of probabilities that may very well be subjective? So there have been many attempts to answer this question, and partly successfully and partly not. Probably one of the best known examples is ergodic theory, where we interpret the results of our measurements as time averages over the trajectories. Another way is to rely on symmetries, to assume that our measurements will have a sort of symmetry, so they will identify some configurations that are different dynamically, but will lead to the same prediction. And another successful way to do that is the max entropy principle by James. And this is very much related to information theory and to Shannon's theory of information. So also here, in a sense, what is common among these approaches is a sort of coarse graining in the way we look at the system. So in the max entropy case, this coarse graining comes from the fact that we have long sequences, like in Shannon compression, and we assume that we get something that depends on that. So these approaches have been very successful themselves, but they didn't completely solve the problem, and the tensions, I would say, still remains there. So what is interesting and what I find fascinating in quantum mechanics is that the situation is radically different there. So in quantum theory, probability has a different status. We can reconstruct the probability distributions from the states that we call pure, so the states that encompass a maximal knowledge about the system. So this is a genuinely quantum fact, so we can have two quantum systems in a pure state, psi of A and B, and we can still have a system A in a mixed state, described by some density matrix. So this fact was noticed, I would say, the first time by Schrödinger, and there is this famous quote. He said, "The best possible knowledge of a whole does not necessarily implies the best possible knowledge of its parts." In other words, even if we have the maximum knowledge about two systems together, still we would have logically to assume that a single system is in a mixed state, so that we have ignorance about the preparation of that system. So the fact that ignorance, and probabilities have a sort of more objective status in quantum mechanics was, of course, noticed first by Schrödinger, and it was re-echoed probably by Aronoff. And the proposal by Aronoff led to some recent results in the foundations of quantum statistical mechanics. So there is a recent work by Popescu, Short, and Winter, and almost at the same time by Gemmer, Michel, and Mahler, about the ideas that we could retrieve the ensembles, like the microcanonical ensemble and the canonical ensemble of statistical mechanics, from assumption about which kind of pure states we are likely to see in our systems. So there has been a lot of work in this direction, not only after the first paper, but with many different types of approaches. But the common idea, which I find really fascinating, is the idea that if you put some restrictions on how the global states would be produced, maybe they could be chosen totally randomly, or maybe they could be generated by local circuits with random elements. If you do this, there are several ways you can retrieve the ensembles of quantum statistical mechanics. And this is a genuinely new way to look at the foundations of statistical mechanics. I wouldn't even claim that this is the way to solve the problem, but I think these examples make a good case for the fact that the pure state picture as a kind of global picture for local mixed states is a fruitful approach, and is probably something that we should look at. As I said, I consider this fact that you can have a mixed state of one system and a pure state of a composite system together. I consider this fact very fascinating and very fundamental. And indeed, with Mauro D'Ariano and Paolo Perinotti in Pavia, we took this idea very seriously, and we tried successfully to reconstruct quantum theory from axioms that were centered around this idea of purification, the idea that every time you are ignorant about one system, you can always find another system so that the two together are in a pure state. So we had a kind of rigorous derivation that if you take purification plus a number of assumptions that are kind of standard and common to quantum and classical theory, then you can reconstruct completely the formalism of quantum mechanics just from these assumptions. So this is finite dimensional work. So in finite dimensions, you can really reconstruct quantum theory just from the property that the mixed states of one system are compatible with the pure state description of the system and its environment. Well, plus reasonable things, but the core of this reconstruction is really purification. So that's to explain where I come from and which kind of project we have in mind now. So the idea is, to approach this idea of to approach the foundations of thermodynamics, starting from the notion of purification. Because in some way, this will put on a kind of more objective ground the notion of ensemble and of mixed state. And this is why I consider purification a kind of important starting point for the foundations of thermodynamics, because it would give a kind of stronger statement a stronger status to the statement that we can have mixed states and have this compatible with the picture of the world where everything is pure and maximally known, which is, I believe, the goal of physics, actually. Okay, so let me now delve into this to the actual project that we are trying to implement. And the project is to find information theoretic axioms for thermodynamics. And in a sense, this is for quantum thermodynamics, because I still think that we would need, I mean, the best possible theory of thermodynamics, in a sense, is the quantum theory of thermodynamics. So to have axioms, we first need a framework. So we need to put our question of, to consider a broad class of theories. So we should put our question in a broader framework that does not contain only quantum mechanics. So I don't want to assume Hilbert spaces from the start. If anything, I want to get them in the end. So I will use a particular version of the framework of general probabilistic theories that was proposed in an early paper by Mauro and Paolo and myself. And the title of the paper was quite eloquently probabilistic theories with purification. So purification was from the very start the sort of goal that we had in mind. So I cannot go into the details, but let me try to give a kind of three slide summary of the framework. So in this framework, we have circuits. So they describe what you can do. I mean, you can imagine that you are an experimentalist. You go to a lab and you find a bunch of devices and you can connect them into circuits. Each device will possibly have some outcomes that you can read from some display. And you can compose these devices in sequence and in parallel as long as the input and output systems of these devices match. So you can think really of these as quantum circuits, like if you're used to quantum circuits, except for the fact that these circuits do not necessarily describe quantum objects. So they may describe classical objects, they may describe some other theory. So this is just the graphical interface that describes what you do in an experiment. And these circuits have an input and an output, so they are directed objects. Okay, so technically, if you like the kind of more mathematical way of presenting this, the mathematical structure that is playing the key role here is the structure of symmetric monoidal categories. And this was really really stressed and pushed forward by Abramsky and Cook in a line of research called categorical quantum mechanics. And in a sense, our framework takes this from the very start as a fundamental ingredient. So we start from the notion of what you can do in the lab. Of course, with only circuits, we don't get a physical theory in the usual sense. What we want is to have something more. We want to have a rule for probabilities. So what we assume is that not only we have circuits, but whenever we connect a preparation, so some device that prepares an input state with a measurement, so some device that, that observes the system, then we get a joint probability distribution of the outcomes. So we identify this diagram that starts with a preparation and then has a measurement with a probability distribution. And by probability distribution, I mean that these things are numbers, are real positive numbers. And if you sum over all outcomes of the preparation and over all outcomes of the measurement, you would get one. So you get a normalized probability distribution. Following the leads of Rüdiger's talk today, I mean, we could even, I would claim that we can always have a kind of Bayesian interpretation of these things. So in framework, the Bayesian part would come here. So you have the circuits that describe what is objective for you, so what you do in the lab and everybody can verify. And on top of the circuits, we put an assignments of probabilities that has to be consistent. So this is kind of the Bayesian part, somehow, of our framework. So if you put together these two ingredients, you get already a lot of structure. So we call this structure an operational probabilistic theory, so a theory that has diagrams and that has probabilities. And just from this, without any further assumption, you get that the states, I mean, the input, the preparation procedures, so they span vector spaces. which can even be infinite dimensional. So the states actually are things that live in some real vector space. And the transformations, so the operations that take one system to another, they would act linearly on the vector space of the states. So you get the linearity and all these things just from the definition of the framework without any further ingredient. So this is a very broad framework indeed. So it contains classical theory, it contains quantum theory on complex and real Hilbert spaces, and it contains more or less every exotic theory you would like to come up with. So this will be my reference for the framework that I will use in this talk. So as I said, the framework is already pretty rich, and you can put forward some definitions. And I give here the definitions that are relevant to my talk. So the first important definition is the notion of pure transformation. So we say that the transformation from A to B is pure if whenever you can write it as a sum of other transformations, meaning that you could coarse grain those transformations and obtain this, then each term in the sum should be proportional to it. So this is the mathematical condition. Intuitively, this means that whenever you could obtain a transformation from a coarse graining of a more refined test, then this coarse graining is trivial. In other words, if the transformation is pure, you have maximal knowledge of what is going on and what is happening to your system. So there is no way to have a more refined knowledge of what the transformation is happening in the lab. So that's the notion of pure, and I will apply this notion to transformations as well as to states, because for me a state is only a transformation without an input, so with the trivial input system. So this is also the definition of pure state. Any question at this point? I mean, I'm trying to go pretty fast on the framework, but I understand that, I mean, it's better to fix here and to make sure that everybody... Sorry, can you... verbally, I didn't write it in the slide. So for me, a state is a transformation without input. So it's this diagram. A state is this, and the measurement would be a collection. So this would be called an effect, and the measurement would be a collection of effects. But we use different names like states, effects, just for human readable reasons. But these things are just all transformations. Some of them go from the trivial system to some non-trivial system. Some other go from a non-trivial system to a trivial one. That's the whole point. Yeah?
Are these states macroscopical or microscopic? I mean, thermodynamics, in a way, is a statement about a macroscopic limit.
That's a very good point. So actually, I hope this will not delude anyone. So in this talk, I will never get to a macroscopic limit. So for this, for me, are generic systems, and probably the best intuition is to think of them as microscopic. Although, I mean, there is nothing in the framework that forces us
but
to do that.
Microscopic in thermodynamics? I consider very small ensembles of systems.
I mean, so nothing prevents us from taking many copies of this to have a kind of IID realization, and this would be described by the framework. So one can do that.
Once you have many copies, would that make the thing microscopic?
Yeah, I would say so. If the copies are sufficiently many, yes, I would say so. So macroscopic for me is just a word for the limit for infinite many systems, which could be IID or not, but typically they are IID. But unfortunately, I will not get to a thermodynamical limit. So the title of my talk is Towards, because it's really, I consider this as a starting point, like setting the scene for doing these macroscopic limits. Any other question this far? OK, so pure means you have maximal knowledge of what happens in the lab. And this is a very important notion for my talk. The other notion is the notion of reversible transformation. So I say that the transformation from A to B is reversible if there exists another transformation from B to A that inverts it. So if you apply the new transformation, so S after T, you get the identity. And if you apply T after S, you get the identity. I mean, I just represented the identity as a straight line that is just not doing anything to the system. So that's the notion of reversible transformation, which means that when you represent these transformations in the vector space picture, you really get the identity operator, the identity linear map on the vector space that you, of your system. And also the notion of reversible transformation will play an important role in this talk, because essentially I want to reduce the thermodynamical notions to notions that only involve pure processes and reversible processes. That's more or less the way we are going to. So that was only definitions. Now I would like to put some axioms about how we may want things to be in the world. Until now, we had only a framework for describing things that we care of. Now I will put requirements on these things. So the first axiom that I consider here is what we call the purity preservation axiom. So the idea is simply that if you have two transformations that are both pure in the sense of the previous slide, so if T and S are pure, and you can compose them in some way, let's say in this way, then the composition of the two will be a pure transformation. So why do I ask for this? Because I wanted to have a guarantee that I can talk about a pure level of my theory. So I would like to have a level where all the processes are pure, that means they are maximally well known. And I would this level to behave itself like a theory. So like where I compose things, I would like them to remain pure. If this can help motivating this more, think about what would happen if this were not true. So you have maximal knowledge of T, and you have maximal knowledge of S. Then you apply S after T, and suddenly you don't have maximal knowledge of what comes out. So you are ignoring something. So what are you ignoring? So the thing that you are ignoring could not be here, because you knew everything you could possibly know about T, and could not be there, because you knew everything you could possibly know about S. So somehow what you are ignoring should be some kind of non-local property of the composition that is hidden, is kind of hiding non-locally in time. And that, well, not even quantum mechanics is so non-local. In quantum mechanics, when you compose two pure transformations, you still get a pure transformation. So I will take this requirement as a kind of very primitive and very basic requirement for reasonable theories where we have a pure state, a pure level of processes. As a special case here, you can consider these two transformations to be just states, so to have no inputs. And in this case, this will tell you that the product of two pure states is a pure state, which is a very basic thing I guess everyone would like to be true. And this is guaranteed by this purity preservation axiom. So the second axiom that I will ask, of which value, yes?
I was thinking of a Navier-Stokes fluid where due to viscosity, no information disappears.
Yes, yes.
So would you want to describe such systems? What does purity mean?
I should confess that I'm not familiar enough to give a kind of well-informed comment on that. But I would say that the viscosity, I mean, in the way I know of it, would be a kind of effective phenomenon. Like if we really went to a fundamental description of interactions, the interaction would be reversible. This is, I mean, for all theories that I know to be fundamental, no, this
I'm
is the case.
In danger. I mean, if you stir your milk in your coffee, then the information appears to disappear. In thermodynamics, that's of course the essential thing of increase of entropy.
Mm-hmm.
And since you have thermodynamics in the type of your talk,
yeah, yeah.
I think that increase of entropy is an important.
Sure.
I
agree with that. So what I want, I mean, so this helps me actually to restate what is the main aim of this talk. So I would like to have thermodynamics compatible with the picture of physics at the fundamental level where things are pure and reversible. So as a physicist, I would always like to be able to describe my systems by assigning to them a pure state and letting them evolve in a reversible way over time. So I would like information to be conserved. I mean, I'm still not at that, but somehow, but this is where I'm going indeed. So as a physicist, I would like that. And as a kind of as a statistical mechanics, I would like instead to see entropy to increase and to see all the kind of dissipative behaviors that you were mentioning. So the whole point of this talk is to try to combine these two approaches, to have a pure state level, a pure level that is the one that this axiom talks about, and then to go down to a level where things can be viscous or can be entropy increasing and so on. So this is an axiom about the pure state level, the level of the ideal physics that we would hope to see if we do, if we investigate enough our systems. So the second axiom is causality. I put it as second, not because it's less important, but just because the first one didn't need it. So I just want to put causality here because you can talk about purity preservation even in theories that are non-causal. So causality is just simply what Czaslaw mentioned before, that an operation that is performed in the future, so later in our circuit, should not affect the probability of outcomes that are done now, so before in the circuit. Equivalently, this means that there is only one way to discard a physical system, which I will call the trace, because this will suggest you what is the right translation of this in quantum mechanics. So don't try to obtain this equivalent condition from the definition. Just trust me on that. I mean, you can prove that the condition of causality is equivalent to the existence of a unique way to throw a system in the waste basket. At least it's equivalent in our framework, given everything that I gave you, that I defined before. So in the classical case, this is really the trace of a density matrix. So when I write a state and I apply this discarding operation, this trace, in quantum theory, this would be really the trace. And this is important for me in this talk because I want to talk about partial traces. I want to consider the state of one system which is part of a larger system. So I need to have a canonical way to discard things. And that's why I care about causality here in the case, in order to connect the thermodynamical picture with the pure state level. So the third axiom is purification. So this is really the big assumption, the one that that boldly makes the connection between the level of ignorance about one system and the pure state level, where we ideally assume that we can know things as well as we could possibly know them. So the axiom tells you two things. It tells you first that whenever your system is in a mixed state, whenever you are ignorant about the preparation of a system, you can always find a description in which this mixed state arises from a pure state of two systems where one of them is discarded. So this pure state of the two systems together is what I will repeatedly call a purification of the original mixed state. So one important comment is that purification is not a physical process. So there is no way to obtain this state starting from the mixed state raw. So this is a kind of a way to describe things. I mean, we are imposing that our theory should be able to reduce every mixed state to a pure state level. And I'm not even claiming that this is how things are in the world. I'm just asking that our theory should be able to do that. So if you want this to be the way things are in the world, at least you want purification to be valid. Yes? Sorry. Can you say?
System B is just something artificial. You say I can make something up such that this holds.
Yeah, I can find in my theory something so that this is true. You may opt for a stronger interpretation to say, yes, this is the way things really are. I mean, our world is made of a gigantic pure state of things that interact together. And that what I see is this mixed state because I'm ignoring some degrees of freedom. This is a strong way to interpret purification, and you may want to go for that. But here I want to be minimal and say, this is just telling that I, as a physicist, can simulate what I see in the lab. I can always make a model, let's say, of what I see in the lab where things could have been pure from the start.
At least in principle, you could test the eigenstate of rho, right? And if you could find them out, then you could build a purification.
I'm sorry?
I mean, the purification is nothing but the spectral decomposition.
But here there is no spectrum and nothing. So here we are talking about theories where you can combine devices and get probabilities out of them. So this theory could have been, until now, even classical theory. So of course, I mean, in quantum theory, this is how you get a purification. So what you are saying is that purification is satisfied by quantum mechanics.
Yes, I think
I totally agree on that. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I'm axiomatizing that you should be able to do that. And say, essentially, my argument would be, okay, you are ignorant about something here. I mean, how would you describe this situation as a physicist who wants to have a fundamental picture of the world where you know as much as you could possibly know about the things you are talking about? So this axiom allows you to do that. We don't know how to do it. I agree with you. At this level, it's completely mysterious, and I'm happy to keep it mysterious, because I don't want to specify the theory for the moment. I just specify the features of that theory.
OK, but maybe, sorry to interrupt, but if you're in finite dimensions, and maybe also in infinite dimensions, a state can be, so a matrix can be purified if and only if it's positive semi-definite.
Yeah.
Purified in the way you are defining. So I wonder if that's not equivalent to asking that row is positive semi-definite.
Sorry, I just have a bad hearing. Yeah.
So at least in finite dimensions, and I would bet also in infinite dimensions, a state can be purified if and only if,
a matrix
can be purified if and only if it's positive semi-definite. So I wonder if you're not asking exactly the same. Namely that
in quantum theory, I'm asking exactly the same. So if you assume that the vector space of your states is the space of Hermitian matrices, this is exactly the property that you're saying. Yes. So I'm axiomatizing that property. I look at quantum theory, I see quantum theory satisfies this property. I like it so much that I want it to be true in every theory that is possibly not quantum theory. So that's the philosophy that that I'm following here. Sorry? Wow. Okay, so I will get probably at telling what are the axioms, and then you will have to figure out the results by yourself. let me comment on this. This is another important thing. So this is a uniqueness of purification. It tells you that if you have two different ways to purify the same state, then they are equivalent up to reversible transformations. So this is very important if you take the point of view of a physicist who wants to make a fundamental model of what he sees, because this tells you that all the models you can come up with are essentially equivalent up to reversible things in the part of the world that you cannot see. So this is a degree of freedom that you always have. So what we are saying here is that up to that obvious degree of freedom, what you see locally defines your picture of the world globally. Okay, so purification gives you a lot. First of all, it gives you entanglement. So whenever you purify a mixed state, you will get an entangled state, so a state that cannot be seen as a product or even as a mixture of products. And it gives you another important thing. It gives you that whenever you have two different pure states of the same system, they must be connected by a reversible transformation. So this is a property that played an important role in many axiomatization of quantum theory, starting from Hardy, and then also Dakich, Bruckner, Massanes, Müller, and many others after that. Well, somehow including ours, because we do have purification, which implies this. So this is also an important property, and it will play a role for thermodynamics if I get to the point where I will show this to you. So now I want to connect entanglement with the thermodynamics, essentially. So the first natural way to attack this is to consider entanglement as a resource in a general framework that was developed by Cook, Fritz, and Speckens. So what I start by considering is a paradigm where we have two different laboratories, the one by Ellis and the one by Bob. Ellis and Bob can do things in their laboratories. They can do local operations, and they can talk to each other. They can send classical information to each other. So they can do all these things. The only thing that they cannot do is to apply joint operations on their systems together. So they can only do things here and there and coordinate themselves over the phone. So technically, what we get in this way is called an LOCC transformation, so something that you can do by only local operations and classical communication. After you have this, you can define entanglement as a resource in a very standard way. So you can say that a bipartite state is more entangled than another if you can get from the original one to the other one by LOCC. So somehow these local operations and classical communication can only degrade entanglement. So they can only ruin the entanglement that was originally in the initial state. So that's the definition. And this definition gives you that the least possible entangled states are the ones that can be generated by LOCC from nothing. So they can be obtained starting with Alice and Bob that have no systems in their lab, and by LOCC they can create these states. So these states are nothing but a mixture of product states. So these are the states that contain no entanglement, and they are no resource here. So now I will put an axiom also regarding entanglement. So I will require that whenever you have a pure state of two systems, A and B, you can swap these two systems by local operations. So there are two local operations, A and B, that you can apply to your system. And this will be the same as really exchanging the two systems by giving B to Alice and giving A to Bob. So this is a pretty miraculous property that happens to be true in quantum mechanics and in classical mechanics, and also in all the theory of no signaling boxes that we know. So here we have a joint operation that can be that on a particular state can be reduced to local operations. So the first result that I have is that using this property, we can reduce every LOCC protocol on a pure state to a protocol that has only one way of classical communication. So this theorem was due to Lo and Popescu in the quantum case. Now we have a purely axiomatic derivation of this theorem without any Hilbert space structure. So why this is important? Because this will make the connection with the thermodynamics, and well, probably I cannot get there, but let me see how far I can go. So now I want to connect the entanglement with the kind of thermodynamical operations. So I will consider a situation where there is an agent that is able to perform, to control the parameters of a reversible dynamics. So you can imagine that a system evolves reversibly, and the only thing that you can do as an experimenter is to tune some fields and to change which type of dynamics you have here. So you can choose to do this with some probability. So as the result of this, what you will implement is some random reversible transformation, where we use with some probability, you apply some reversible operation. So these are the kind of paradigm of noisy operations that you could do in a thermodynamical setting. So you can define that a state is more controllable than another if you can get from one to the other by random reversible transformation. And this idea actually appeared before in a slightly different context. It was called the group majorization by Lewis and Marcus. And this is exactly the same notion, the notion that you can control the dynamics, possibly in a random way, to get from one state to the other. And in this way, what you get is that the pure states are the ones that are most controllable. You would like to connect this to thermodynamics, so you would like to say that this theory, this resource theory of controllability, is actually the same as a resource theory of purity, of the purity that you can have as a resource in thermodynamics. And you cannot really do that by just from the definition, because you have a lot of exception to that thing. I am afraid I cannot go into that. So let me. So if you want actually to have a theory of purity, what you really need here is that you can connect all possible pure states together by reversible transformations. So we have purification, so that property is true. So our theory of control is actually a theory of purity. And we can now get to probably the most important result that I wanted to show, that is a duality between entanglement and the resource theory of purity, which is kind of, I think, the core of quantum thermodynamics. So using only purification, we can show that if a state is more mixed than another, the purification of that state is more mixed than the purification of the other. If you assume the other axioms that I showed to you before, we can also prove the other way around using the Lo Popescu theorem. So essentially, the main result, the first important result that we get here, is a result that tells you that there is a complete duality between the resource theory of entanglement and the resource theory of purity, which will be the starting point to define entropies. And this duality goes through the operation of discarding and to the non-physical operation of purification. So I think my time is up. So I cannot show to you why this is so useful and so important. I think, however, I'd like to stop here and just jump, skip maybe 20 slides and go to the and go to the last one where I have the references for you to see where you can get these things. So you can find all I said about purification in these papers and in this book that will come up soon on Cambridge University Press. The results that I just mentioned is in this paper. The ones that you haven't seen are in a paper that still has to come, so you haven't lost too much, in a sense. And I also would like to advertise this book that is not about the things I mentioned in this talk, but is a book from contributors that are, many of which are actually here in this room now. Is a book about this kind of general probabilistic theorist approach to the foundations of quantum mechanics. With this, I thank you very much for your attention, and sorry that I couldn't fully cover what I had.
No. Amazingly sharp on time, so we have 10 minutes for questions.
So my question is, could you do just at least a small overview of this thermodynamic part?
Well, is that, you are the
no, I'm just asking as a person from an audience. It's just a question. I'm just interested.
I can mention to you what are the main results. So this probably would not take more than a couple of minutes. So let me see where I should go. So the first result that I liked very much was the fact that after you have this duality between... I should go here. After you have this duality between entanglement and purity, you can make lots of connection between them. So you can show that a task of erasing information with a catalyst, so of transforming a mixed state into a pure state with the help of some catalyst that remains untouched, so erasing information by random reversible operations is equivalent to generating entanglement from a catalyst, like starting from some entangled state to generating more entanglement. So what I found striking here is that there was nothing preventing this fact. So, and this is something you would like to prevent because you would not like to have an entropy sink that is able to erase as much mixed states as you would like without paying a fee. So doing this forced us, to assume this requirement as an axiom. So we assume that there are no entropy sinks. And this, pretty amazingly for me, gave rise to a construct on purification. So we have really a connection between thermodynamical things like erasing information and quantum information things and the properties of the purification that you have in your theory. So I take this as an indication, as a further indication that purification is a good axiom to describe what is special about thermodynamics, at least in the quantum case. The other interesting thing is that if you ask something about measurements, if you ask that you can measure, you can do some measurement that is repeatable in the world of pure processes, then you suddenly become able to diagonalize the states. So writing them as mixtures of perfectly distinguishable states. And you get that the spectrum of a state is majorized by the spectrum of another in the case that you can get one state from the other by random reversible operations. So from this you get entropies, because after you have this property, you can take every function, like the Shannon entropy, that is a sure concave, and this will give you a notion of entropy in the general probabilistic setting. And if you want to have an if and only if, you can add an axiom that is very related to something that Howard Barnum will mention later, that if you can permute reversibly the outcomes of this canonical measurement that is repeatable, then you get an if and only if condition. So you can get that a state, you can go from one state to another if and only if the state is majorized by the other. So the state has a smaller degree of mixedness as measured by these functions. So this is the third main result that I had to show. And I think actually, thank you very much for this question because this gave me the chance to actually to fill completely the gaps, at least quickly. So essentially we got these axioms and these are what I consider like a kind of a strong choice of axioms that capture quantum thermodynamics. I mean, this is not a theorem, it's something that I believe. So I just express my belief here, and this is given by these five axioms.
So it's just a naive question. I mean, that there is this abstract framework with these axioms as a result of the form, and it's always possible to realize this in terms of operators on Hilbert space or something like that, or is this really more general?
So from the outset, it is more general. So we want to start from something that has the potential of being as general as possible. In the reconstructions of quantum theory, we wanted to have enough axioms to force these states and operations to be representable as operations on Hilbert spaces. So a reconstruction of quantum theory is a project where you take a framework like this, you put enough axioms, and in the end you prove a theorem that says that whatever state and transformation that you have, this can be represented in Hilbert space. So about these axioms, my conjecture is that they actually imply quantum theory in one or another form. So in a sense, I would argue that quantum thermodynamics is somehow the theory of thermodynamics, if you want the benefits of all these things that I showed in this talk.
But this is not clear. I mean, so this is something you would still like to prove.
Absolutely. I mean, here I'm at the level of opinions. So the theorems were before. In these slides, are just expressing what I think is a good research project.
So two questions. Well, if I only have time for one, then one. But the first one is, did I get it right that you have a relation between the entanglement of the best pure state that purifies your system, the mixedness of the mixed state? But that's not saying, or does this imply anything about the entanglement of the mixed state? Can you say something about
No. So I'm talking about the entanglement of fewer states. I should have said that, but in the kind of under the pressure of all the things I wanted to say, I forgot to say that. So I'm talking about, I was talking always about the resource theory of pure bipartite entangled states.
All right. So
and I had the reasons to do that because I had in mind Schrödinger's point of view that entanglement was originally defined at lack of knowledge of one system compatible with maximal knowledge of two systems together. What came later is kind of a further elaboration, but the original idea by Schrödinger was pure state entanglement bipartite versus local mixed state. And somehow here it became quantitative, because it became the more mixed the mixed state, the more entangled the purification.
I wanted to ask about the
Did you have a second question?
Yeah, I do, but maybe I others want to.
Yeah, maybe let's go to Robin because we don't have much time.
The random reversible operation.
Mm-hmm.
I have the impression that you're thinking that this will characterize thermodynamic resources to some extent.
Yes. To some extent. I mean, so there's still a lot of stuff to add.
So there's one sense in which I think that's perhaps a slightly wrong approach. That so the conventional way of trying to formulate case you're considering where you're not worried about energy conservation or anything like that, you just have abstract energy degenerate systems, is to allow not just mixtures of unitaries, but also unitary couplings to systems that are already completely mixed.
Sure.
And the difference that it makes is that pure states of different dimensions are different resources. So you know, with a Sillard engine, pure state of a trit and a pure state of a bit give different amounts of work. And in your case, they're reversibly inconvertible. So I'm curious whether...
That's a very good point. Well, it's good also because it brings me to some other result that I couldn't squeeze into the talk. So the idea is that, this is a kind of unsatisfactory part of the definition I gave. Why did I give it then? Well, I gave it because I wanted to start as general as possible and gradually to constrain the properties of my theory. So then the definition I gave is what I consider the most general definition that you can put forward in every probabilistic theory. You may not be able to do much with that. So the other thing you would like is to define kind of transformations that are noisy, that send kind of maximally mixed states to maximally mixed states. And you define a resource theory starting from that. Actually, this was the approach of Jonathan and Michael in the quantum case. We can do that, but to do that, we need the axioms that I showed. I mean, I can say interesting things about that resource theory only if I have I need all of the axioms that we have here. So that's why I gave the other definition first, because somehow the other allowed me to talk about mixedness with less assumption at the beginning. So we, I mean, but I agree with you that ultimately we would like to treat that case, you know, noisy operations defined in that way.
So maybe a very last question, but we should also already come up one thing.
Yeah, I guess I was wondering how you kind of get the majorization, because that seems to be a very, you seem to only, like in the quantum case, you only get that with some very physical assumptions about what kind of operations you're allowed. You know, in the quantum theory, we can get different laws besides majorization if we choose different kind of paradigms sometimes.
That's another very, very good point. So the way we get it here is essentially from the steering property of states. So the way we get diagonalization of states and the majorization eventually comes from the fact that we can purify every mixed state and we can use a steering, for those who are familiar with this expression. So essentially, majorization for us comes from the fact that if you apply a measurement that distinguishes states in a perfect way to a set of perfectly distinguishable states, not the one that is distinguishable with that measurement, you get a bistochastic probability distribution. So that's where we get majorization. And it's nice to stress that here we get it from steering, from a correlation property. That's nice to stress because in a couple of talks you will, I think, see another way to get the same result, but without the correlation properties. So, and I think this is kind of an interesting point of contact with other work that will be presented by Howard later. But here we got it from essentially from purification and the existence of a measurement that is ideal.
Okay, I think we should stop the discussion here.